Blog Talk Radio.
Hey everybody, how you doing? This is Sinai Gordy, and this is another segment of the DNA Show. That's right, we're back here in Taino Radio, and we have our hostess, and her name is Inaru Boria, and we know her as Scary Steph. How you doing? What are you doing?
Hey, Sinai Gordy.
Oh, man, this is amazing that we're going to do this DNA show. And, you know, the ratings were really great last time we were on, and people really enjoyed DNA, the DNA show, backed by popular demand. We're gonna try to keep the momentum. What do you think about that?
I think it's a great thing. You know, we have a lot of inquiries that we get online about DNA and different things that show up in DNA, theories about DNA, questions about archaic DNA, alien DNA. So, you know, hopefully we can touch on a lot of things in this segment of DNA on Taino Radio.
That's good, man. Have you had any recent research you've done on the arena of DNA or any insights, any updates on that, even with DNA?
Well, as far as Arayeke work goes, I talk to at least one person almost every day regarding DNA, their genealogy, you know, helping them understand their DNA, their migrational patterns, being able to help them pinpoint where and how their Taino heritage can be found in some of the things that they have, and, you know, helping even figure out North American indigenous native connections. So we've been doing a lot of it, a lot of family tree building,
nice.
And just really trying to bridge those connections and help people out in understanding their place in the DNA world, because, you know, we walk around and we know, you know, that we're indigenous, we know that we're native, and sometimes we look for confirmation because a lot of people have those stereotypes still in their head about what you're supposed to look like when you're native. And, you know, sometimes we don't fit those stereotypes, and it becomes a concern. And, you know, DNA testing and sometimes even using just GEDmatch for additional resources and information really provides almost like a breath of fresh air to some people to be able to say, hey, I knew it, and now you guys can't tell me anything. I know me personally, having my DNA done, and then using GEDmatch and using archaic DNA helped me gain personal clarity in that aspect, because it was always, I look like something, but they could never pinpoint what I look like. And then it was always,
right,
I needed to try and prove my genetics. And, you know, that takes a hit. It takes a hit on you as an individual, like, dang, well, is it even worth it? Is it really worth me claiming this heredity that I have when, you know, I have to sit here and prove it all the time? Maybe I should just, you know, honor it in private and not speak about it out loud, but that becomes a disservice to the ancestors, you know? A lot of them died for us to be able to practice, you know? A lot of us weren't even able to practice our dance, our songs, our singing, our remedies, our ceremonies. So for us to stifle who we are to appease other people that may or may not believe us, you know, and feel like we need that validation, things like Ancestry and 23andMe and GEDmatch provide the fresh air for some of us to say, you know what, ha, here's the proof. This is, you know, who I am, and you guys can kick rocks if you don't like it. So hopefully we can continue doing that work. And, you know, really building up that sense of pride amongst one another, whether it's through DNA testing or just through healing or, you know, through ceremony, because we can't walk around with that kind of a mentality right now. It's not the time for that. It's time for us to be loud and proud and really work on enriching and keeping the culture alive. So hopefully the people who tune in to the DNA segments can start to feel a sense of understanding amongst themselves and, you know, ask the questions that need to be asked for them to have the clarity and the confidence that they need to be able to walk loud and proud and show that they are resilient and that they are here and that they are present and that they matter in every capacity, regardless of how they look. And so, you know, that's definitely something that we should always keep in the forefront. And specifically, I was working with Lisa Suarez last night, and she had her breakthrough moment, her feelings of relief last night. So it was a very endearing moment that I was able to share with her in helping her go through that journey. So, you know, doing things like
it's
rewarding. It's definitely rewarding to be able to feel that sense of relief come from a person, and they know forever that they are native. They've been native for their entire existence. That's all they know. And now they no longer feel the need to have to prove, or, you know, even if they have always been confident, it's still a breath of fresh air for them to be able to say, "Woo, I knew it, and that's it," and just walk away prideful, you know. So shout out to her for allowing me to be part of that journey with her yesterday. I have a few other people that I need to connect with from Arayeke that will be doing more DNA work. But it's a rewarding thing to have people allow me to be in such an intimate piece of their life and, you know, provide them with information. So I definitely appreciate that in its entirety.
Oh, that's amazing. That's a gift, you know, when we could enter into people's lives and help them and trying to make their life a little happier, right? And this is what's been going on.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm.
Wow. To me, you know what's interesting, as a Taino nation or indigenous Caribbean peoples, we have a difficult, you know, every nation has a difficult, how can I put this, we all have our battles, we all have our struggles, every nation, you know, but I think as a Taino people, our struggle is the documentation, and especially when you're looking for sovereignty and things like that, mm-hmm. you know, it's like, man, we need this documentation, the paperwork, but it was purposely destroyed. This paperwork was purposely destroyed and burnt, and what do you do? So I guess for us, that DNA is our best bet, especially when we have families that don't have enough documentation or don't want to talk about it.
Exactly.
Here's the proof, right?
Mm-hmm.
So this is an effective tool.
It is.
It's an effective tool.
It's an integral part of us being able to claim that identity, because again, you know, so many people have written down in scholastic, you know, information that we were extinct. You know, the population, yes, it was decimated, but we did right. not die out. You know, we took shelter in other places. We migrated. We intermixed. And, you know, over hundreds and hundreds of years, we still have genetic imprints that show and prove that we belonged to this group of people. And without having the ability to test that DNA and to have these genetic pools to test, you know, chromosomal matches and, you know, characteristic traits and everything that can possibly identify us as Tainos, without having a means to be able to do that, it would be almost impossible for us to prove our lineage, you know, through the paper genocide that we've been forced to experience. And then the fear mm-hmm. that has been imprinted in our people, our ancestors, you know, the claims and the falsehoods that they've been forced to basically make reality to them of you know, the negative stereotypes of what it meant to be indigenous,
right.
you know, and then their fear of claiming that loudly. It definitely mm-hmm. put a hard place in like the reality of being able to claim this indigenous identity. So DNA testing has been a strong point in making sure that we can continue to carry on and prove exactly what it is that we need to prove to try and gain sovereignty, to just try and gain recognition and understanding and, you know, lay claim to the things that we should be inherently given, you know, having ancestral lands and being able to grow our indigenous herbs and, you know, our sacred ceiba trees, you know, being able to have access to those things and just carry the culture. So DNA testing mm-hmm. has definitely began to create different avenues for us to start laying claim to a means of sovereignty. So hopefully, you right. know, we can start the process. And as we start the process, hopefully, you know, generations, younger generations fall through and they come in and they continue to fight with us and they fight a little bit harder. And the generation after that fights harder than they did. And, you know, hopefully we
That's
can
right.
really build something to continue on this legacy. Because it's here, you know, it hasn't gone away, contrary to popular belief. We are here, we are loud, we are proud, we are so, so proud. And, you know, we're ready to fight for it.
Mm-hmm. Well, I have a theory that I want to discuss tonight. And the theory is, I'm looking at my DNA, my chromosomes, right? I'm constantly looking at them through 23andMe to have a good setup. And I still have a majority of my chromosomes, I have these gray colors, gray areas, because they color code the different countries or ethnicities. Bunch of grays, which 23andMe has not deciphered yet. I don't know what it is yet. And I don't know about you, but I think in our data bank, we have pretty much DNA from every creature in the world, right, and planet Earth. And
right.
23andMe still can't figure that out. Like, what is that? What is that code? You know, those genetic codes, right? So so what I've done is I want to talk about the connection with the star people. How about that? And I want to throw out some points and maybe you guys. So because of that, we're going to do a crossover. We got Scary Steph right here. And we're going to reach out to the Spooky Lou Show.
Who's that? What? I know I heard something. They're going to come and kill me. I know they will. What is that? What
is that? What is that? The studio's kind of
loud. I need you running. There's nowhere to go.
Oh, okay.
How help me. I need some help. Help me. Oh my God, I heard that. What are you doing?
Don't do that.
I'm so scared. Help me.
Why is it?
Oh my God. That is hilarious, man. Thanks for the intro. I didn't expect that.
Why is it when I mention the Spooky Lou show, my studio goes crazy? I was just going to play the song for 5 seconds.
Oh, man.
And it just
froze.
The studio froze. So this is a crossover show, man.
Well, thank you. Thank you for the invite, you know, and that's a rarity for me to get on during the week. What's up, Creepy Steph? How you doing tonight?
Hey, Spooky.
You know what's funny about, I never had a chance to really listen to the DNA show yet. A little bit here and there when I get a chance, but not a full show. But today I find it really interesting when someone was asking about, you know, the relations between DNA and whom they might be related to. And then somehow you were able to connect this person to the Clovis people. And I find that really interesting. So the whole day was on my mind, like, how's that, like, I wonder if there's genetic makeups that we don't understand and we don't, like, really know where they come from. And I had no idea, Lou, that you were going to talk about this and that you were going to bring that up. So I'm glad that the show is kind of having
really?
That paranormal twist. Yeah, I had no idea, honestly. That's pretty
cool.
Yeah,
that's what sold this too.
Yeah, how were you able to make... Mm-hmm. Go ahead, Lou.
Well, I was doing some research, right, on future shows. Actually, I'm going to do a show on Taino culture for a future Zoom. And I came across some old research I did on the artificial cranial deformation that our ancestors practiced that's really not spoken of much in our communities. You know, we talk about the hairstyles, we talk about the regalia, but we practice that, the artificial cranial deformation. So I'm always was fascinated about that. And actually, I am very fascinated. Yeah, I even... When I did my Taino Sagrado wrestling gimmick, I cut my hair in the front to imitate that, you know, the frontal forehead. That's what I'm trying to imitate, the forehead, as traditional as possible.
Right.
Because if you look at it, we flatten the forehead, right? When we were an infant, the mothers would flatten the forehead with two boards.
Mm-hmm.
Right, we'll tie those boards and form the elongated heads, right, skulls. And so imagine if you have an elongated forehead, you got the ponytail in the back, right? So I try to imitate that style by cutting the hair in the front, what little hair I have left in the front. And I still have hair in the back, so, you know, when I put the red makeup on the front, you know, I can feel it. I can feel those vibes, those ancestral vibes. So my whole thing is, why did they do that? Why did they see that as beautiful? And then you look at all ancient, throughout the world, the ancient peoples, they did the same thing. A lot of different countries. Mm-hmm. So actually this morning I was, sometimes I go through YouTube and I found a couple of videos on Brian Foster. I don't know if I'm pronouncing it right. Forster, Foerster, and he's he's an archaeologist.
I've heard
Brian.
Of him.
I don't know if you know him, Lou. Yeah. So he's the first guy since 1920 to examine the Paracas skulls in Paracas, Peru, and there's over hundreds of skulls that's elongated, you know. So he's the recent person, archaeologist, and he's a full-blown archaeologist. And the archaeology community blew him away, you know. They didn't believe in his work. So recently, he came out with another video. Wait, 2015 was the last major video they did on him, on his work. They did a lecture. And recently there was a video that came out of him. He's a YouTuber, actually. You can find him, Brian, B-R-I-E-N, Forster, F-O-E-R-S-T-E-R. Since the academic community doesn't take him seriously, he went on YouTube and he posts all this evidence of all his studies and stuff. And he challenges the academy. He says, yeah, do some peer review. Here's the evidence. And what happened, he's done some great stuff. And he compares, like, Homo sapiens skulls to these skulls. And it's some of the skulls that he found are not human. They're not Homo sapiens. There's something else. But here's the thing. This is what I was going to say. The recent DNA study they did, he finally got the University of California stepped up and they offered to do it for free, DNA analysis, you know. And the natives came out with haplogroup B through the maternal, which is the, that's the Andean haplogroup. But then the paternal haplogroup were from Eurasia. Eurasia. Am I pronouncing it right?
E-U-A-R-A-S-I-A.
Mm-hmm. And they carbon dated 800 BC to 100 BC.
Wow.
So now there's that whole theory. How did they get there? How did they get to Peru? You know, how did they get there? So it seems like they started at the Black Sea and they ended up in Peru. Mm-hmm. So a lot of these skulls have red hair. They had like
red hair,
blonde hair, so on. Yeah. But my whole thing is, my theory is this. Ready? Here's my theory. We got these Peruvian skulls. We got the Egyptians as well practice deformation as well. We got the Tainos doing it. My theory is, were they exposed? And this is the connection. When I saw a stone in Borinquen, I saw the Behique mask. I saw the different petroglyphs. I saw Mako Kaer. I saw all the main hitters, all the majors, right? And all the way in the side of the stone, there was 8 grays, Star People grays, you know? And that was ancient carvings. And they had elongated heads. So my theory is, at least for the Taino, I believe that they're imitating those grays. That's my theory, because I saw it in the carvings of the stone in Borinquen. Also in Cuba, it's called Montané Museum of Anthropology in the Havana University. They have elongated heads as well that our people use, similar to those Peruvian heads. So what do you guys think, man? Am I off base or what? See, my theory is connected to those petroglyphs of those 8 grays, elongated heads. Is there a connection? Am I way off? Am I crazy or what?
I mean, I think it's possible. I mean, how many times have we heard stories of, and this goes back to our paranormal show, actually, how many times have we heard conversations and people saying that they're part reptilian? I mean, there is so much that we don't know about DNA still.
Right.
You know, there are so many components to what makes a strand of DNA, that double helix. There's so much information within that double helix that we still haven't been able to decode because we don't understand it yet. We don't have the tech to be able to physically break it down into, you know, a clear, concise from A to ZZ explanation of what it is. So, I mean, considering the level of unknowns, the lack of information that we have, the lack of things that we can even compare it to, who's to say probability that something from outside isn't inside of our DNA? You know, everything is probable to an extent.
Yeah, that's...
But I want to hear what Mr. Paranormal wants to, what he has to say.
That's right.
What do you think, Lou? What are your feelings regarding the probability or the possibility of having alien DNA in our DNA?
Well, I think anything's possible. I definitely believe that there's some sort of history that we're not aware of. It's not written yet. You know what? Give me 1 second. I'm having a little technical issue here. Give me one moment.
No, I was gonna bring about the Star Child skull. Maybe later I'll bring that up. For many years, I was spoken about a paranormalist, Lloyd Pyle, P-Y-E. He found the skull in Mexico. Maybe later I'll bring that up.
I agree. That's what I was kind of going to towards lead to.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh,
yeah,
go for it, man.
Because, I mean, I believe that there's definitely history that we don't understand or that wasn't documented, and history that was purposely destroyed. I mean, we know for a fact that when the Spaniards reached Latin America, right? I don't know who it was. Was it the – you would know, Lou. One of the tribes on there actually had books, and they burned all their books in their libraries. Am I wrong? I don't know if it was the Mayans or someone, but they kept historical actual books and looked this up.
That's the Mayan text.
The Mayan text, and they destroyed the majority of it. There's books that we don't understand. The code, exactly. There's books out there that no one can decipher and don't know where it came from, and it contains what people believe are like herbs that's not from this earth and how to cure things, but no one knows where it came from. I don't know if you know about this stuff as well. But there's a lot of history that we don't understand, and we don't know where it comes from. You know, like the Sumerians, we're not sure what really happened. The Egyptians, even with the Mayans and the pyramids, how did they receive this technology or the intelligence, you know? I don't want to take away from our ancestors' intelligence, because I believe they were highly intelligent because of what they were able to, you know, create. But did they receive help? You know, where did they come from? And like Lou said, supposedly they found those crystal skulls, which, you know, people say it's a hoax, but they say it's real. Also, like you said, right, the Golden Child, I believe it's called, the Star Child.
Oh, the Star Child.
That's
the Star Child?
The Star Child. So the Star Child, I don't know if you heard of the Star Child, right? That's what you're gonna lead into?
Right.
Yes, and then supposedly they found that skull down, like you said, in Mexico. I don't know, how old is it, maybe 3,000 years old, and its head was not like of a human origin. But even with that, if you do enough research, they did DNA, and they're saying that the DNA is coming out that child had to be human. But I think it's possible that there's something that they don't understand, or maybe they're just labeling as human because they had nothing else to go on. And if you look at a lot of old stories, like, for example, Native American stories up north, the northern tribes, right? They believe we came from space. They believe that we're made out of stardust. Right, Lou? They believe that we are, you know, and it's proven that we are made of stardust as well. So these tribes that always said it, predicted this, and they even know exactly, even though they may not share this publicly, but they even know exactly aligned of what area is space to look at, and they believe where our ancestors came from. So there's a lot of stories out there that we really don't know and understand. It's not shared, and maybe scientists have not been able to tap on that. Or they have, but they publicly do not want to release that information. You know, and that's why I find it interesting, and I want to get back to this in a moment. But I need to. I'm really curious, Steph. How were you able to connect someone back to Clovis? Because I know Lou, you said you were also related to the Clovis Child. How do they know?
Yes,
this?
Yes, does match. Mm-hmm.
How is there a match? Like, what? How does that work?
Okay, so essentially, when Clovis was unearthed, they pulled DNA samples from Clovis to be able to identify it, to be able to figure out how old the bones were. So for the people who don't know Clovis is a it's remains of a child who was found out in Washington State. And essentially, they found the child, and the child was surrounded by what looked like to be indigenous native objects. They were buried with the remains. So they did some history, some carbon dating, and the Clovis remains are roughly 12,500 years old. So they believe that Clovis provides a link to the migration pattern of people from out east who traveled through, I believe it was through Europe and into the States. So they went through the Asia area, through Europe, over and into what is now the U.S. And they use Clovis to essentially mark if you may be part of indigenous Native American, North American lineage. So with the DNA that they had extracted, they were able to create a DNA kit on GEDmatch. So what they did was they uploaded the raw DNA from Clovis to the GEDmatch website. They created a kit number, so for anybody out there that does have GEDmatch, if you want to check to see if you are related to Clovis, the kit number is S999919. And what you do, essentially, is you'll take that kit number and you compare it on a one-to-one autosomal comparison with your kit number. So for GEDmatch to be able to find a viable link between generational connections, you want to keep the centimorgans, the CMs, at roughly 7. Sometimes you can go as low as 5 and still be able to receive a viable hit, but usually anything under 7 centimorgans is depleting the level of the pool. And it makes the search so broad that it finds any little possible connection chromosomally. So if you drop it all the way down to 3 and it's a recent DNA sample, you're likely picking at straws. Whereas if you drop it down to 3 and you're talking about archaic DNA, then you have more of a chance, but it still opens up that genetic gene pool to be able to misrepresent the amount of genetic DNA that you may or may not have in common. So if you have any kind of genetic mutations that happened and you have a fluke situation where that genetic variance ends up matching the archaic DNA, it could still be a false positive. So the lower you go, the less likely you're going to have a viable connection or relationship to the archaic DNA, but it's still a probability that you may match. So what I ended up doing with Lisa yesterday was I took her kit number and I uploaded it into the system, compared it to the kit for Clovis. And like I said, this DNA is 12,500 years old. Right?
Wow.
She's coming as a viable match with, you know, 6.1 centimorgans as her immediate connection to this archaic DNA. And for me, honestly, that threw me completely off, because we're talking about not 2,000, you know, not 5,000. We're talking about 12,500 years ago. And she is popping up with something that is so close to being able to find a most recent common ancestor within maybe 8 or 9 generations.
Wow.
So, right. Wow. So things like that are peculiar in some instances. You know, most people get a hit at around maybe 3, 3.3, 4.3. 7. I've never seen anybody hit higher than a 4-point-something on Clovis. So that was amazing for me to see, and the reaction that she received out of it was so humbling for me, because it was a very emotional thing. It was a wonderful experience to be a part of. But it was so wild. It was so mind-blowing. I know that when I matched with Clovis, I believe I didn't match past a 4-something. So it's interesting. There's also the Kennewick plan.
Wait, say that again, Stephanie? You said you didn't match with Clovis?
Oh, no, I did. I matched with Clovis. I matched with Clovis.
Okay.
I matched with the Kennewick man, and I matched with the Taino Lucayan woman as well. So I matched all of those archaic DNA.
What's a Kennewick man? What's a Kennewick?
So the Kennewick was a man who was found in an indigenous man who was found in Kennewick. And
where's Kennewick?
Where is Kennewick? It's out west.
In the States somewhere.
Clovis was found in Montana. Think maybe the Kennewick man was found in Washington. I think I might have confused where Clovis was. I think Clovis was out in Montana.
Oh, yeah.
And Kennewick
Clovis is
out
Montana.
In Montana. Yeah, Clovis is Montana, and Kennewick, Washington. So he was found, his bones were found. He's also identified as an indigenous male, and he's also archaic DNA. However, I don't remember how far back his DNA goes, but he's also an oldie, to say the least.
Okay.
And, you know, they use his DNA as well. If anybody wants to test that kit, I believe that's S999970 is the Kennewick man's DNA kit number on GEDmatch. So, again, you would want to start off down to 5, and you could still try and get a generational match there. And then if you have to drop down to 3, just, you know, take it with a grain of salt that it is archaic DNA, so the match may be viable. It may not be viable, but if it comes up with something, you know, there is a possibility. But, yeah, we have lists and lists of Inuit and Kennewick and German, Serbian, Siberian archaic DNAs that are out there. The kit numbers are available. You know, they're open files and open research for people to be able to and try and match to essentially help them try and find what they're looking for. You know, some people are looking just for a connection to a heritage. Some people are looking to find out a little bit more information of where they come from and what they may or may not belong to. Other people just do it for giggles, you know. So whatever it is that tickles your fancy, it's out there, and the information is definitely receivable. As long as you look in the right places. But, yeah, that's essentially how I found out that she has a relation to Clovis, same way that I found out that I had a relation with Clovis. The kit numbers are available online. They used to actually have a list of them on GEDmatch, but for some reason some kits have been taken down, so you have to do a little bit more digging nowadays.
I wonder why. But it makes sense because you guys are kind of caveman, so, you know, I can see you guys being related to these old people.
Yo, funny story, I'm not even going to lie to you. I did my 23andMe recently. I did Ancestry like 10 years ago, but I did 23andMe recently. I just got my results back like within the week, and I have I have a solid percent of Neanderthal in me. So, you know,
what's the percentage?
I'm over here doing my test.
Well, what's the percentage?
I think I have 2 or 3% Neanderthal DNA in me.
Yeah. I got 3.3. The highest you can have is 4.
Man, yeah, no.
Why is it the highest?
What? Huh?
That's old
why
DNA.
Why is it the highest? Yeah, but why is it the highest? Why?
That's the most they found in human beings is 4%.
Through the generations, the DNA splices. So, you know, you'll have a little bit trickle down and carry through. But over generations, it depletes little by little by little. So the fact that some of us still carry Neanderthal in us is, it's wild. Not everybody has it. But you will see it in a good amount of groups.
Well, can I just add something on the Neanderthal? Native Americans have a high percentage of the Neanderthal on the DNA bank. But,
really?
But I was reading a report.
Yeah.
I was reading a scientific report that they said natives that have straight black hair, same thing with Asians, straight jet black hair, that's the Neanderthal gene, hair gene. Because
Neanderthal has
straight hair. They had straight hair, the Neanderthal, and then the Homo sapien had the curly hair, like from Africa. See?
Oh, so that explains why my ex was crazy. Now I get it. It all makes sense now.
Ivan Diesel.
Did she carry a club?
Huh?
Did she carry a club? No, I'm just kidding.
Oh yeah, she carried several clubs. He's buck wild then, but. I have a question for you, Lou. Oh, because you were saying earlier that, because I want to understand this. So when you're on the DNA site, it specifically tells you that there's DNA that they don't know where it's inconclusive, or they don't know where it comes from, or they're not sure.
They don't know what it is.
That they're not able to diagnose it. There's some where they'll label it as like broadly European or broadly Asian or broadly something because they can't pinpoint it. But then there's other DNA that they literally will write down and say unidentifiable.
What does that mean?
They don't have a genetic to match it with. So a lot of the DNA sites, right, the way that they get their information is by asking certain questions. So they'll ask you, do you know your ethnicity? Do you know, you know, where your family comes from? Where do your paternal parents come from? What about your great-grandparents? And they'll take all of this information and all of this, these statistical pieces, and they'll pull together these generalized ideas, and then they'll compare your DNA to the rest of the pools that they have that match those areas. So they develop this grand space of things that they can compare and contrast. So there are some pieces of our DNA, like I said before, in the double helix, everything's not identifiable in it. We don't have the tech to do that yet. We don't have the information to do that yet. So as science continues to advance and we get more detailed responses, there's certain things that may have fallen in larger sum lump categories that no longer fit because they've been able to diagnose it into smaller sections and smaller subpools. So now they're getting to points where they need to get more information to be able to identify certain markers. And until they can get the science or get enough genetic samples to have to compare to those specific things that are unidentifiable, they're going to just still be a mystery.
So, if that's the case,
they know everything.
Are you saying that?
They know everything. They know what African is. They know what Irish is. They know what this is. They know what that
is,
but they don't know what this is.
That's why I'm confused. Yeah. Like, that doesn't make sense to me. So that means that people are carrying DNA that's unidentifiable.
Right. And
like
I find it more
like
natives
you
than anybody. Well, I find it more, you know, I've seen.
I have it as well. Yeah. I think almost 2% of my DNA is not identifiable in any capacity.
Yeah.
So it
doesn't matter. I love Caribbean people. I see a lot. You know, I used to be part of this cousins group in Facebook. I still am, but, you know, I would say like 3 years ago, I was like real into it. And I looked at over 40 23andMe's and what's the other one? Oh, and GetMatch. No, I use GetMatch. Oh, 40 kit numbers, right? And I would say 90% match for Clovis and 100% of everyone they had high percentage of, they don't know what the DNA was. It's the gray color. 23andMe uses gray, but they don't know. It's amazing. It's like 100% had all of that. And, oh, what I find too, the women had the highest percentage of COVID, the women. So, interesting. Did that answer your question?
Yeah,
I'm not sure.
Yeah, Lou, what about you? How much was there, like, not identifiable for you?
Well, it's funny. When I did 23andMe, like, 4 years ago, I had, like, 36%, right? And then it went down to 20. I think now it's less than 10%. So they're trying to figure it out, I guess. I don't know. But also, you got to change the measurements. I think it's, like, conservative, moderate. I forget what the third one is. It's all estimations they do, you know, but I think the conservative one is like down to maybe less than 10%. But look, 4 years later, they still haven't figured it out, right? So that's some star people DNA, right?
Well,
you know, I just want to, huh?
No, go ahead, bro.
I just want the listeners to know, I know there's some people who want to call in. The number is 515-602-9792. That's 515-602-9792. You can look on the Black Talk Radio, there's on the connection to the show, there's the number there as well. 515-602-9792. There's some people that want to call in. I don't know. My theory is there's something in our DNA in the Caribbean that is unknown. They got to figure what that is. I think it's star people. I think it's some star people DNA. Our ancestors spoke about it. They carved it in the stones. The grays, especially the grays, you know.
Lou, what about the star child? You were gonna talk more about it.
Oh yeah, the star child. They finally did DNA testing on the skull, and they found out that the baby, he was five years old, toddler. It had haplogroup C, which is actually, most Tainos have haplogroup C, which is rooted in South America. And the female skeleton that was next to him, she had haplogroup A. So most likely she was not, his maternal DNA was C, she was A, so most likely she was not the mother. Most likely she was not the mother, as believed, you know. So they found this skull in Chihuahua, Mexico. It was the skull next to a human skeleton. But check this out. They found out that the paternal DNA was Q, which is also native. And I believe Q is very rare. So for many years, they thought, since they couldn't figure out what the paternal DNA was, the theory was that it was star people, or alien, as they say. But now they determine it's Q. But, you know, a lot of those traditional tribes, we say we come from the stars. So, hey. Let me see. Hold on. Yeah, so C is native. It's usually from Venezuela, Colombia region, the sea, which we call the Arawak. The Arawakan people, you know. That mixed with the A's,
I told you I
the Mayans.
One, right?
What?
I told you I met someone that said that they were a star person, right?
Oh, that you met someone that was a star person?
That's what they told me.
How did they look?
Hot as hell.
Here you go.
She was.
From the planet Mars. Was what? Wow, are you kidding or what? Are you real?
No, I'm being honest. 100%, I'm being very honest. And I'm being honest, she's very beautiful, too. I still know her.
Now, was she a hybrid between human and star, or star child, or was she straight-up star child?
Yeah, I think she explained something like that to me. I didn't really understand it. She told me that she told me that she's a star. I forgot how we got to the conversation. She told me she was a star child. And I was like, wait a minute, what do you mean you're a star child? She's like, I'm a star child. Like, I come from another planet. And I was like, yeah, you're lying. She's like, I'm not lying. I'm being very honest. And I was like, well, what planet are you from? To be honest, I don't remember the conversation because we're in the middle of this thing that we were doing. We were working. And we were doing like a volunteer event, actually. She's Native American, actually. And so we were working on some stuff. And then we got really cool. We're still cool. I just haven't really spoken to her. But she told me that she's not the only one. There's several star people here. Now, what I didn't understand is if they were spiritually from other planets or physically from other planets. I didn't understand that part. But she says that they meet, like, every once in a while in the middle of nowhere in the mountains, and I don't really know what to do. I don't know if they pray or they walk around, but they're here to help mankind and to help humanity better itself, you know. And she told me that one of the traits that star people have is they're missing a vertebrae. I think that's what she said. I'm not even sure what that is. It's a vertebrae.
It's the parts of your spine.
Did she show you hers?
No, I wish, but no.
On the first date, she showed you her vertebrae.
I was ready to show her this
name.
It didn't happen. No, but that's what she said, and I looked up information on it, and it said that. It said people that claim they're star people a lot of times are missing a vertebrae or something like that. There's something weird or I it was so long ago, the conversation, and I was, like, blown away. I tried to kind of bring it up to her again, but she never really spoke about it to me. I guess it's because she doesn't want to do it online. And she has a life, right? She has a family and everything, and she's a sweetheart, wonderful person, but it blew me away that someone would tell me that they're a star person. And she was detailed with a lot of things that they did, where they come from, what they do, and the fact that they're missing, or they have an extra vertebrate. That's what it is. They're born with an extra vertebrate. That's what it is.
Uh-huh. You know what? That explains a lot. Wait a hold on. At the bad joke.
I didn't get it.
That's why he's bad. It's some Star Child inside joke. Hey, look!
Oh,
hey, look! We got a caller.
Not the fornication guy.
All right. This caller is from the planet Earth, Mother Earth. Let's see.
Hello.
Caller, I have not. Wait, who is this?
Kwainaru.
Wait, who let you on planet Earth? Wait a minute. Hold on a second.
Hi, Primo. Hi, Prima. Hi, Spooky Lou.
Hi, how you doing?
How you doing?
Wait a minute.
I'm loving the subject. Primo, what are you going to say now?
Wait. You haven't been in planet Earth for a while. Who let you in? Wait a minute.
You did. You just let me in. You opened the portal. You opened the portal.
Oh,
sorry,
man.
I'm in.
Well, guys, well, you know what? I know. Go ahead.
I'm saying this subject is, like, really desolate to me because I'm a very, I believe in aliens so much. I believe in UFOs, aliens, and the Log Native skull was always a fascination to me. And I'm listening to it, and I'm like, wow, good explanations about this stuff, you know? But I do still think it's not from this planet.
What's not?
Personally. the star, the people with the elongated heads. The star child.
You're
I don't think it's
right.
from this planet.
You're probably right.
I really
well,
don't.
They say that
think
it's
of it this
human.
Way. Think of it this way.
Mm-hmm.
Half human. They don't have half of the DNA. If I remember correctly, if I remember what I read a long time ago.
Well, they said
a
it's
lot of
Q.
It is unknown
now, that,
DNA.
Yeah, well, now they're saying it's Q, that he was Q, the father, which is Native American.
Yeah,
so
I read that too. I read that too. So he had to have a human mother and human father. But, I mean,
right.
we really don't know the truth, but that's
exactly,
because no
they'll cover everything. You let me shut up. The government.
Well, the guy
you
was
know
killed.
How that is, everything.
Pyle.
Wow, see?
Lloyd Pyle. He was killed. He was murdered.
Explain the
wow.
story. I didn't know that. Tell us the story.
They said he had more
yes.
evidence that he was going to expose. He was going to reveal, I should say. And he was killed. He was murdered. Yeah.
Huh.
How was he murdered?
I think was it he was, I forget the circumstances, but I don't know if he was killed.
Was
wow.
it an accident? You know how they say it's an accident all the time?
Wow, I remember when he first came out saying that he had some new evidence. Maybe if anyone's listening, maybe you can look it up, but they say he was murdered.
Wow.
Hold on, let me see.
Wow.
But listen,
Well, look, if you listen,
you've done a lot of study on this,
right?
Uh-huh.
Who, me?
Yeah, you've done a lot of studies. I know you read a lot of books
on
this subject.
Well, yeah, I kind of do. So I'm trying to say the pictographs that we see from the past, half
uh-huh.
of them have aliens on it. I do not want to debate that. It's definitely there. So half human, half animals, you know? They
right.
can just, like, make this up. Like, where's that idea coming from in their brain?
Yeah.
You
well,
understand what I'm saying?
Well,
like,
yeah,
you can't just all of a sudden.
Well, you're a witness. When we went to Nawake, we went to
oh, yeah.
an unknown location. And we had to make a promise. We won't give the location of this place because the people that
mm-hmm.
live in this area guard that stone, the sacred stone.
Oh, yeah.
And you saw those
mm-hmm.
petroglyphs, right? They were like grays, right? The elongated
yep.
heads.
Yep.
So,
I think I even have a picture of the mother daughter cave that we went into, and it had the
mm-hmm.
remember it had the. I have a picture of that.
Oh yeah, that's the other
somewhere
cave. The in San Lorenzo.
The
no,
mother
not San
daughter
cave. It's on Espino.
But what is
it? Was
it?
The yes. cave.
It was a cave. It was an alien figure head carved into the stone.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, great.
You know what I heard? I heard in one mm-hmm. of the other islands off Puerto Rico, like, I forgot the Cheo, I think it's where it's at. They say that there's caves there, and it's filled with petroglyphs, and it has all kinds of alien faces and heads and all kinds of petroglyphs with stuff they can't identify. But I don't think you're allowed to go there. I think it's like a government, like, I don't know. I may be wrong. But I know it's one that the government did experiments on.
Wow. See, this,
oh,
this,
here
this,
it is.
The more you tell me, the more I want to go.
What was that?
No, go ahead. What you were saying, Louis?
Did you want to go back to the cave, you said?
Yeah, I want to go back to that cave.
Yeah,
and
very
wanna,
powerful.
And
you know what? Uh-huh.
I definitely want to go to the alien cave that we were supposed to go to that we never went to in Puerto Rico.
Yeah.
Remember the one that Yare told us about?
Yeah, there's a whole bunch of caves in the eastern part of the island that has a lot of star people on petroglyphs.
No,
yep.
I'm talking about where the man supposedly sees them all the time.
Mm-hmm. Right, exactly. They come out the water. The ships
mm-hmm.
come out the
that's
water.
The
there's an underground
right.
base.
Right.
But
that's
here's
the
thing. And, you know, and Yare was a witness to that. She went
mm-hmm.
one night. She was invited.
Mm-hmm.
We never got a chance to go. So I tell you, there's so much stuff. That's what I mean. My theory is our own people, our Taino ancestors, they, you know, they elongated their heads. They must have been imitating something. They
exactly.
must have been imitating these star people. The grays, right?
Exactly. That sounds like it. Mm-hmm. I mean, where do we get these ideas from? Where do we get, mm-hmm. where did the Neanderthals get the idea to make fire? Where do they get the idea to make a wheel? Where do I, somebody's guiding us.
Right. What happened, Lou? You see my question?
I was just going to say, do you have proof that, I want to say proof, but I never heard it. How do you know that ancestors?
Wait, hold on. There's some background noise. I can't hear.
Hold on. That's me. Hold on.
Okay.
Go ahead.
Yeah, just mute yourself for a minute. What happened?
Yeah, I was going to say, I never heard of this, but how do you know that our ancestors actually practiced this as well? I never heard of that before.
Oh, the elongated head?
Yeah.
Oh, Columbus was the first one to report it when he described described our people. Yeah, Columbus, yeah. They saw it as a symbol of beauty. Then, trying to think of the other scholar, Spanish writer that was there. I left my notes in my job. So I'm doing a study on this. I'm gonna come out soon, but I don't have the names with me. I left it in my job, but yeah, definitely the.
They're
talking wrestling in the background.
Yeah,
can you mute your phone, Dana?
Yeah, I'm gonna go upstairs.
All right, cool.
I'm going to sit.
Thanks for coming on.
Yes, no problem. Right. This is my favorite subject. That's my son-in-law and my son. They're making fun of me because they don't believe in aliens like I do. They're making fun of me.
Gotta believe, man.
They're
gotta
young.
Believe. They say things don't exist.
They're young. They don't know.
Yeah. Yep. But they say things don't exist.
And you want to know what's weird? Him and my son saw one. They all three saw UFOs, but they don't believe in them. And I'm not saying they really saw them here in Pennsylvania.
There you go. Look.
They really saw them.
There you go.
Yeah. My son said that one day they were driving home. Him and his husband were driving home. And it literally was an open road. It literally passed in front of their car. And all they know is that time stopped. And next thing you know, it was like an hour later, and they never spoke about it. And until recently, they started speaking about it. And here where my son lives at, there's they always see green orbs, green flying saucers all the time, you know, the orbs, the different color ones.
Mm-hmm.
So one night, my little son, Marcus, the wrestler, was with them, and he saw it also. And I had just fallen asleep after waiting out there to see it. They pass
That's
by
crazy.
Here a lot in Pennsylvania, especially by my son's area. I don't know if it's because it's a rural area. You know, it's like more woods than anything.
Right.
Because he lives by Game State Land. So, but they're always passing by here. Always.
Well, and Lou, you know about this. One of the hot spots all over the world is Puerto Rico, Borinquen. UFO sightings.
The what?
One of the biggest hot spots of UFO sightings in Puerto Rico.
So I have a question, Lou.
Yeah.
So what do you think, and everyone on the show, right, what do you think happened years ago? Do you think aliens came down and just like why don't we call blank at this time? The Nibirus, the Anunnakis, right? Everyone has different names for these people.
Mm-hmm.
Do you believe that it's a possibility that they came down, they mated with us, or they created us in order to be slaves to really, like, you know, mine gold for them or stuff like that? Do you believe that this is what happened? Like, what could the theory be? Did they come and were they escaping, you know, death from their planet, and they came and created humankind that looks like them, you know? Or like, have you heard of any legends or anything, you know, in your studies that correlates this, that can be interpreted that way?
Well, according to the Taino creation stories, right, written by Ramon Panay, recorded by the Spaniards, our father was Deminan Caracaracol. You look at his statue, he looks very, doesn't look human, right? Looks very reptilian. And then the mom, our mother of the human race, was a turtle mother, a woman, a female turtle, Cari. So, and then there's a famous semi, right? There's a famous semi of Yokahu, Barwa, Maracoti, that they will bury this semi in the crops, the yuca crops, so it can grow. There's a famous semi where it looks like a turtle is over him. There's a turtle over Yokahu, two big eyes. What is that all about? Right? A lot of clues were left behind.
Stephanie, what is your take on this?
Well, I'm one of those people who believe that the Lemurians came here, they inhabited Earth, the graves came down, and they fought, basically, the Lemurians. So I feel like some of them were here, some of them stayed here, and through the need to continue creating lineage, they, you know, so I definitely think there's a strong possibility that alien DNA or those alien relations may have happened, and you know, now we're experiencing some of those things where we're dealing with pieces of DNA that are non-recognizable because of that intermixing in some way, shape, form, or fashion. Because it's kind of, for me at least, it's mysterious to know that there are so many indigenous groups that share so many similar ideas from so many different areas that weren't physically able to have contact with one another at the same time.
Exactly.
And the way that we have been able to create these monolithic structures that, you know, correlate with constellations and stars and galaxies and have this unique sense of time and direction and understanding how to move by using the sky. And for it to come out of nowhere and just be an epiphany that happened and magically worked, I don't think it's coincidental. So, you know, it leads me to believe that there's a possibility in there somewhere.
Huh?
Wow.
Exactly.
Well, guess what?
To me, I'm very spiritual. Everybody knows that. Who knows me? I'm into energies, vibes, everything. And I always think of the phrase made in the image of God. To everybody's God differently. I'm going to say it. I'm not trying to be, you know, in religious. I'm just saying the word God, okay? What does that mean? Who's the God? Is it the aliens? Are we being made in his image? And the Bible just put it down as that? Do you understand what I'm trying to say?
Yeah, I know where you're going with that. Mm-hmm. I know where you're going with that. The biggest mystery.
Do you understand what I'm trying to say, Lou? Like, mystery. When we say made in the image of God, who's our God? Why we look like this? You understand? Mm-hmm. And how do we know if this is what we're supposed to look like? It's just, I'm very, like I said, I'm very fascinated about this subject, about aliens and ourselves. And they always say we have power in us, we have gifts in us. We're made up of energy and a lot of energy, believe it or not. And that's where Reiki healing comes in from and from other forms of healing. So if we're supposed to be just humans, how do we have these gifts? If in logical sense, we're humans, we're not supposed to have nothing, right? We're not supposed to be psychic. We're not supposed to be clairvoyant. We're not supposed to have none of that. Where do we get these gifts from then?
The devil.
Exactly.
Oh my God, don't say that.
You understand what I'm looking at like that. Yeah, you're right. I definitely see where you went with that one.
Yeah. I'm very into alien. I have a book that talks about it. You know, that's all I read. It's books on aliens and stuff like that. So, and I also read just different religions, I would say, about everything. And like you say, creation stories, rituals or whatever, they're all the same concepts. How, if we're all from different places of the parts of the planet that we weren't even connected, like Stephanie said, no land, just water, how do we all have the same pictures of the aliens?
Well, there you go. And all these ancient cultures that are still alive now, practicing their rituals, a.k.a. Native America, they point to the stars, right? That's the origin story.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So I guess with the age of, social media, fancy buildings, and civilization as we know it, I guess, these star people got kicked out, right?
So that's another thing. How come me that want to see an alien ship so badly can't see one? And people that
look behind you,
yeah, right? I'm in my room too where there's native woods and trees. And I look up and I never see one. And people like my sons that they believe, but not like as much as I do, see them all the damn time. What's with that?
Wow. Well, sometimes you got to go late at night. Yeah,
Louis, it was 3 in the morning. I was standing outside the balcony while the last visit I was here, and I didn't see any. I was like, listen, I was waiting an hour. I had a chair. I'm not going to lie. I had my Bud Light, my cigarettes, just sitting there, nothing. And as soon as the moment I lay down, both of them is like, Ma, is he? Is it? By the time I ran out, I said, boom, it ran by. It went, flew by.
Wow.
So it's like they seen it. They both seen the green orb. My son, my the oldest is constantly seeing it. He lives here. But they both seen it. And my son, recently, Marcus was in his bed in Brooklyn, looked up by his window, and he saw a flashing light, and he's looking at it. He said it freaked him out so much because he's saying, this was mid-COVID. There was no air traffic. You remember that, right? There was hardly no air traffic?
Mm-hmm.
Mid-COVID when it was really bad, and he looks up and he sees something. He goes, oh, look, in his mind, oh, a star. Wow, that's a bright star. All of a sudden, he started making erratic moves, and he's like, he literally sat up and thought he was bugging out. Like, he got up, and he said, phew. He ran into my room, and he was freaked out. He's an alien. Oh, shit. A UFO.
Well,
I can't see one.
There's plenty of evidence. There's plenty of evidence they exist.
I've seen UFOs. Matter of fact, go to my Spooky Loose Paranormal page. I just posted a video on there. When a local girl here in Vegas, she sent me that video saying that she caught something while she was just in the sky. And at first I couldn't see it. When I looked close, I was like, oh, wow, what the hell is that?
I have somebody that's on my Facebook page that lives on a res. And they were doing a ceremony, and above them is a UFO. I don't know if I still have it. He sent me that. He's like, here, Diana, for you. I know you like aliens. So
you should post it on my Spooky Loop page. Oh, are you speaking of when they were doing the commercial for the powwow in New Mexico, and a UFO flew by? Is that what you're talking about?
I think that's it. He lives in New Mexico.
Yeah. That was a news channel that was was filming I think for the powwow there, and in the commercial and for the news in the background.
But he was there at the powwow.
Correct. But
he was a participant.
You see it clearly in the video going by, and that's the news. I know what you're talking about. That's a pretty powerful video. It's on my page, too. It's pretty cool.
Isn't that crazy? The most times they caught them, believe it or not, it's like at a, by mistake, like at a, you know what I'm saying? Like, oops, there goes an alien ship, you know? It's not meant to catch them a lot of times. A lot of times they're just out there, and they get caught in video.
Well,
look, the government's, I was going to say, the government's releasing a lot of footage now. You know, they're admitting to a lot of what's going on these days. You know, I'm sure you've been hearing about it, right? Even Obama talked about it.
They're releasing the NASA files. That's what you're talking about?
No, I'm talking about the
Pentagon.
The what?
The NASA files is also.
Yeah, not the NASA files. These are files that the Pentagon is releasing about things like the TikTok, those jet fighters that filmed some weird stuff they can't identify. Matter of fact, there's a good YouTube video of Homeland Security filming the same thing off of Aguadilla, Puerto Rico. If you go to YouTube, you'll find that there too. It's very similar to what it's very similar to what those jet fighters filmed off the East Coast and the West Coast. While they're practicing. Go ahead, I'm sorry.
I'm asking, Spooky Lou, you would know, right? There was this, since you're into the paranormal and stuff like that, there was this called the dogfight that the soldiers started shooting up in the air, and they were actually having a fight with aliens. Do you remember that, the name of that? What that fight, it was called the dogfight, but there was also another name for it.
Yeah, I don't know the name. It happened in California back in like the 40s during World War II,
right?
I think it was. Yeah, they thought it was an alien and it was shooting at the. But you know what? There's been a lot of studies on that too, and a lot of people say that it was the North Star, and that they confused it for planes. But other people believe that that's a lie, that they were really
shooting
aliens.
Because
they were shooting
back.
That's the thing. People claim they were. Some people claim that they weren't. I don't know, but that's the story behind it. They say it was really UFOs that were. You're right. It was UFOs that supposedly were shooting back.
Fighting with the freaking army.
Yeah.
Or whatever they were, the soldiers. Yeah.
That have you guys ever heard of that story or no?
Yeah, definitely. That happened in. Was that the one in 1950s?
Yeah,
I'm
in California.
Yeah,
it was during the Japanese, right, World War II. It was during the Japanese.
So it's 40s. Yeah,
it was the 40s. It was the 40s during World War II. They thought it was an invasion, but it was nothing at the end. Certain people claimed that they were shooting back. Other people claimed there was no one shooting back. It was the military themselves. And then they did a study on it. People said that it was at the North Star, and they thought it was like a Japanese plane. But other people said it was like actual UFOs.
Wow. Well, you know, there's a lot of people that go on these retreats out in the Midwest and, I don't know, the Lakotas and stuff, Montana. A lot of retreats by the Native Americans out there, like vision quests and all that. And they always train the people that at night they will maybe they'll encounter star people. That's how they refer to them, as star people. And not to be scared, not to run, but they're ancestors.
Well,
that's
look,
how they
so
teach
it,
them.
Was, it was called the 1948 dogfight. That's what it was called.
Yeah.
When the
dogfight,
it was called. It was at in North Dakota, I think.
Was it North Dakota?
It was a 27-minute chase. North Dakota.
Oh,
by the airport. It was crazy.
And maybe that's something different. Maybe that's something I never heard of. But I do want to say this, Lou. You. That's interesting you say that, because one of the most, I told you, profound UFO sightings that I personally had was when I was up there up north up that way, and it was during a Native American, you know, ceremony. And actually, mm-hmm. It was before. And I was on sacred grounds, and that's when I saw that UFO, and I had that
right.
personal experience that I had. That changed my life forever. And it's interesting that you said that, because I didn't know that. I didn't know that they prepare people and tell them, don't worry, that you might see this, and it's your ancestors. That's crazy.
Yeah, people are trained. People are trained in those retreats not to, because, you know, they put you out there in the mountains. You're by yourself in these vision quests, so they prepare you. That you know, you might encounter a star person, but that don't fear them. That they're on our side, so they don't refer to them as aliens. And those are our relatives from the stars.
That,
you know? That's what they say, relatives. They're not to fear.
Wow.
Them. This
that's
is taught right
like
now. This is
so
traditional. Yeah, these are traditional mm-hmm. people saying this. They're our relatives
wow.
from the stars,
yeah.
and they come visit. You know, see that as a good thing. Because imagine you're in the middle of the woods in the wilderness. They're not going to check on you till the next day. All of a sudden, you see someone from another world, right?
I'd be like, hey, how you been?
Yeah, right.
That's kind of what happened to me. I was out in the middle of a swamp, like in the woods, like straight wilderness, man. And when I saw that, it just blew my mind. Like I, dude, it was a crazy story. Crazy.
Tell us
right.
the story.
I'll save that for another night, because I'll do it on my Spook Blue show. You're gonna have to tune in for that one.
Okay.
You're gonna have to tune in.
Yeah, man.
I'll tune in.
So listen, we got a couple of minutes left, but we're gonna end the show now. But hey, I'd like to thank everyone for coming in. And I just wanna say Lloyd Pye, P-Y-E, he died of lymphoma.
Lymphoma.
That's
cancer?
What he died of in 2013. But a lot of people say they found it strange that he got sick, or he was a healthy man, all of a sudden he got sick like that. So
it's an accident. I'm doing air quotes, guys. Air quotes. It was an accident.
Wow.
Right, so they're saying it was a suspicious death. A lot of his followers
mm-hmm.
are saying it's suspicious. That all of a sudden he gets lymphoma and dies of cancer. Right, you know, right before a major breakthrough.
Government. Okay.
So there we go.
Well,
so I just wanted to correct that.
Okay.
So,
I just want to say thank you, Lou, for having me on the show. Thank you, Creepy, for having me on the show. You too. I didn't get her name.
Diana.
Diana. Oh, okay. I'm sorry. I didn't know it was you. My apologies.
Well, no, because when I said Chiquay Naru when I came in. So that's why you don't know it was me.
No, I'm sorry, Diana. My apologies.
No problem.
So anyone listening, if you want to follow, you can follow at Spooky Lou Paranormal. Spooky Lou's Paranormal on Facebook. You know, come give some love. And I'll show you some love right back. Huh?
I hear
right.
you
say, listen.
Mexico.
Oh, yeah.
What's
I know
that
anyone who anyone who listens
okay.
to the Taino Radio, you know, it's a family affair.
Yes, it
absolutely.
Is.
Absolutely.
Well, prima,
so,
everybody, just thank you for having me on the show. I appreciate you guys. Much
thank
love.
You. Awesome.
No problem.
That's great.
I'll be coming on more often. I like, this is my subject. I like stuff like this. Especially
nice.
Paranormal, ghost, everything, all that stuff. And Louis, don't worry, I'm going to give you that book very soon. I have a book on aliens, on how they came into our planet. You know which one, right, Louis? The one that you wanted to read?
Right.
When I get home, I'm in Pennsylvania right now. I'm on vacation. But when I get home, I will take a picture and show you guys it. So you can read it.
Nice. Well, it's too late for me to have an elongated head, but I'm trying my hairstyle.
Just put it up like Kid and Play, like from Kid and Play.
It's long enough.
All right, man. So you
Many
all take care.
Guys.
And,
good night.
It's beautiful seeing everyone.
Many blessings. I see you
We
soon.
Are going through an identity crisis as human beings. We don't identify and recognize ourselves or participate in this reality from the perceptional reality of a human being. We do it from gender, we do it from race, we do it from religion, we do it from blah, blah, blah. We do it from all these different things, but we don't participate in this reality with the perceiving reality as a human being. And no matter how you look at race, gender, or any of the other things that we participate in, any of these other things, every one of those things participates in reality from some form of feeling as though they're a victim. It's just psychologically programmed in. So we need to remember that we're human beings. We need to think and feel and see like human beings, because that's what the whole industrialized civilization, civilizing process was about and is about, is to erase our ability to recognize ourselves as human beings. This is what I call true perception reality. This is how you change spiritual perceptions of reality. You get the human being to no longer understand being a human being, and then you alter their spiritual reality, man, and you really have made your big time. After that, it's always about catch up. It's a human being. So we need to remember whatever it is that we're dealing with, we need to think like human beings. Our power. And this is where it's important to understand about being a human being, because we don't recognize ourselves as a human. We recognize ourselves as human beings. Human. Bone, flesh, and blood. Alright? It's made up of the DNA. Our DNA, we're made up of the metals, minerals, and liquids of the earth. We are shapes of the earth. We have being. All things in the earth are made up of the, they have the same DNA. Everything on the earth. Same metals, minerals, and liquids make everything on the earth. Everything on the earth has being. We all have being. Our being comes from our relationship to the sun, sky, universe. It's literally like the sunlight. That's like the sperm that brings life to the water-bearing moon that is the earth. So our relationship as human beings to the reality of power is in our relationship to that reality. Now, being our power. All right? So.